Welcome to Africa's LSP podcast, where we explore the world of translation, interpretation, and localization, as well as connect with the language industry's top players. From language service providers to the businesses and individuals who rely on their services, we'll be delving into the challenges, opportunities, and trends shaping the industry. Join us as we discover the power of language and the impact it has on connecting Africa and the world. Brought to you by Bolingo Consult and hosted by Nat Kintela, Africa's LSP podcast is the go-to podcast for all things language in Africa.
Welcome, language enthusiasts, to another episode of Africa's LSP podcast. For those who do not know, this week marks the Koi Koi Language Week for 2023, and as such, we are dedicating today's episode to celebrating the Koi Koi language, culture, and heritage. Joining us to do this is Jeffrey Hatzenberg. He's an ardent advocate for the Koi Koi language and a vibrant force striving for its revival and recognition. Hi, Jeffrey. You're welcome to Africa's LSP podcast. We are delighted to have you.
Kaise kankan sky ayos o. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Right. So let's start with you telling us a bit about yourself. I mean, who you are, where you're from, where you're based, what you do, etc.
Thanks for that question, little about identity. The Tonske are Jeffrey Uasibotakobatsenberg. My name is Jeffrey Uasibotakobatsenberg. For my maternal side, I am from the Kohokwa Khoi. For my paternal side, I am from the Nama Khoi. My original roots lies in the Hottentots Valley of the Western Cape in Namaqualand in the Northern Cape. But I'm currently based in Ngaremepo, South Africa, in Klapmuts, a small hamlet on the outskirts of Stellenbosch in the Cape Winelands district. And what I do is I'm a Khoi Khoi language activist and a heritage preservationist. And also I also do Khoi Khoi language basic level phrases and basic level introduction on foundation phrase at a local primary. And also I'm planning to have a local literacy reading drive at the local library in my hometown.
Right, so you're a Khoi Khoi language activist. Can you tell us what exactly drove you to go into Khoi Khoi language activism?
Well, the reason that I became a Khoi Khoi language activist is because on a personal note, I can remember 12 years ago, just before my maternal uncle was passing on, he was lying on his deathbed, and his famous last words that he said to me was, "Jeffrey, my son, you must know who you are and where you come from." And that made me think, okay, society perceives me as a colored, or even in Khoi Khoi, there's a nice word to describe it, a born, a nothing. And I thought to myself, whoa. How can society be? How can society just erase you like that from the diaspora or the spectrum of society? In hindsight, I am not. And then actually drove me to make further introspection and research, but well, I am not a coward, I am a Khoi person, and being a Khoi person, you must have that basic phrase or that basic foundation to say, if you are that person of that race or nation, you are supposed to have a vast world language that roots you in Africa to say that this is my identity.
And how has the journey been so far? I mean, how are people within the Khoi Khoi community and generally in South Africa taking this whole idea of Khoi Khoi language activism? Are people beginning to appreciate, accept, and then learn the Khoi Khoi language?
Interesting question about journeys. It's now 13 years that I'm busy with Khoi Khoi activism, and on a grand scale, it is now 8 years that I'm busy with Khoi Khoi as a language. Because remember, Khoi Khoi is a language, it humbles you. It is not just like any other language that you just go and think 7 days I will be fluent in the language. No. Khoi Khoi language is a language of kwasi or respect. You have to respect the language. You don't come and say that, okay, I'm going to speak in 2 weeks or just 1 week, 5 days I will be fluent in this language. No. Then you do yourself a big error. You cannot say that. And also, recently I was reading a book about the loss of language. What is the reason why we revitalize languages? Why do we When you revitalize the language, what does it do? And actually, it gives you shivers down your spine. If you can read what a loss of language, loss of identity, loss of sense of belonging, loss of everything, what it does to you, it is a very true or sad state of affairs. Because once you are stripped of language, then you are a nothing. Nobody thinks actually anything about you. And actually, it's a deep process. But many times in this journey, many people would ask me, and it is like society perceives you to be, you must be de-Africanized if you are busy with Khoi language and Khoi as identity or self-identification that I am a Khoi person. But and once I can recall, someone once asked me, what am I doing in my free time? I say, well, I'm learning the Khuvas of my Abuhan or the language of my ancestors, Khoi Khoi. And to my surprise or boom, the same person said to me, Jeffrey, what's the matter with you? Are you now trying to become like a darkie? And I told, and I was like, in the back of my head, whoa. How can you say if I want to speak Khoi Khoi and learn Khoi Khoi that I'm going to sound like a darkie? I mean, like, what kind of a paradigm of racist, caste, xenophobia is this to de-Africanize me? Because remember, Khoi Khoi in its clicks alone, it humbles you. It gives you that sense of belonging, that sense of identity. And also, for me on a personal level, learning Khoi Khoi, it's of Kuri Sen or self-healing. Because what has been told for us, what we have read, what we have learned, is that in this journey, that how our Khoi people have been disowned and dismantled and stripped of language, culture, and identity, it's like a true survival genocide.
Right, right. Awesome. So, can you share with us some of the challenges associated with promoting the Khoi Khoi language, both in South Africa and around the world? And how are you addressing these obstacles?
Can you imagine that, Nate? That indeed there are many challenges in a Khoi spectrum. For example, the biggest challenge is there is a new phenomenon in South Africa, where you get suddenly out of the blue, you get some people that come and pretend and give their, I cannot come to that English word, but I'm going to just keep it straightforward. They come to the party and, figuratively speaking now, not like in physically a party and literally, nobody just come and proclaim, I am a king, I am a paramount chief, I am a headman, and I'm like, well, how can you do so? This is the challenge. Money is the main cause that people nowadays in the Khoi community, that you get even the so-called middle-class colored society that just want to come and jump onto the bandwagon and come and say that we are chiefs, we are kings, and even now you get the talks that they just come, I'm going to put a leopard skin over my body, I'm going to wear a headpiece, cultural headpiece, and just parade, and I'll call myself a king, a chief, a prince, or whatever, because government is going to sort me out financially, and that is challenge. Number two, whenever we have in South or spaces comes or conversations about the Khoi, you tend to get this tendency of people who try to ignore or silence you. I know for a fact, me and many people at grassroots level that do this work, we know that you have to research your stuff thoroughly before you want to utter things and you want to say stuff. And even for example, I know for a fact, Nate, you probably saw in our off-the-air conversation that we had, that you saw on my Facebook profile that I am an artist and whatever, but I noticed you probably saw on my social media that I also posted advocate about the challenges of caras in our Khoi communities. For example, how many of our Khoi people in county districts on the so-called Cape Flats and so on in the flat courts and blocks, what challenges are on a daily basis that we face? And then on the other end, then you get the middle-class colored community. And also, the most shocking part is, for me on a personal level, what I once experienced was that even people tend to think that koi work is an esoterical thing, that certain people can talk about it, and when they talk about it, that they can just rent their mouth and you. And I know you probably saw a picture of me, that even there's a certain standard of how koi people can look like and who are able to talk about it. And I'm like, no man, please, 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 don't make this an esoterical thing. Make it an open thing. Because even the other day I was talking to one elder, and he told me, Jeffrey, that what is the definition of a non-wise person? Is a person that tried to make a point, but he doesn't make his point. He just goes with the flow, and when it affects him, he or she wants to utter and try to play the victim. And that's probably the most biggest challenge that we face. Why do you want to more or silence a person that advocates for the truth? Because don't get me wrong, if you advocate for language is a broader thing. There's many things in language that can be discussed, like identity even is broad, because nowadays also another challenge that is faced is, why is it that in South Africa, for example, that what type are you are being seen as a great worth thing? For example, if you read in the newspapers, you see in South Africa, according to traditional affairs, 5 tribes in South Africa gets recognition from the South African government: the Nama, the Kurana, the Griqua, the San, and the Kikoi. And I'm like, Kikoi? You cannot. I know for a fact there is 15 in the southern Western Cape region, there are 15 tribes of the Koi. And you cannot just juxtapose everybody under one umbrella and call it a Cape Koi, because it's not going to work like that. And even white people are always just referring to the tribe, is because we all know the problem in South Africa in history. What is being perceived, what is the Koi? How the Koi look and what has been said, it's that true or painful thing that still haunts us. And it's the biggest elephant in the room. Also, you will rather see a person, and even, it's not that I'm trying to jump to conclusions or point fingers, but even certain groups or tribes think that they are, it is a social status, because affiliates you to a certain political party in South Africa, and that is the rotten part where everything comes together, and that is what I told you out of few challenges that we face. But it's a work in progress. We're grassroots level, we do our best to make sure that people understand and get a better understanding what is this about and why is everything so.
Great. Now let's delve deeper into the language proper. Jeffrey, can you share the history behind the Koi Koi language with us? I mean, its origin and the part of the world where it is spoken.
Now we are getting to a point, the history of the Koi Koi language. Well, Koi Koi language is as old as humankind, because remember how the world evolved, how everything evolved. Koi Koi as a language is still here, actually, for a fact. Yesterday evening, I was reading also a book that said, even before, from the 6th or the 7th century, when civilization was being implemented, even now we can see Koi Koi is the mother of mother tongues. Every language, Bantu or non-Bantu languages, its words in phonetic and monographical wording in dialects and everything, everything is rooted back to Koi Koi. So how can you go, Koi Koi is the mamas of mamas who wasa, or the mother of mother tongues? You get it?
Right. Are there any varieties of the language? If yes, we'll be glad if you can share them with us.
Well, another interesting question. The varieties of Koi Koi, there are a lot, but another challenge in varieties of Koi Koi. Why are we always trying to say that Koi Koi is Nama, Griqua language, or Kora? It's not right. It's everything is Koi Koi. It's under the same umbrella. Even for a record, for an interesting sake again, I'm reading a lot about these things, and I came through a little study that if you break down even the Korah language, that if you listen to the words and you read it, it is the same as similar to Nana. It's basically Koikoi. So why is it that there must be made a book out of it? No, it's challenge after challenge after challenge. We get these things. And also, lastly, Koikoi is an umbrella language, the main language. Just the others that the varieties that people try to say it's the major language, it's not like that. It's just a dialect under the main umbrella named Koikoi. Even for a fact in Namibia is another problematic case, but I'm not going to divulge into that because the name Koikoi is just a story for another day, but we won't be having a conversation about what's going on in Namibia. We'll just focus in here as in the Republic of South Africa or Narema.
Great, Jeffrey. I'm curious to know, what is the estimated number of people that speak the Koikoi language in South Africa and around the world? And in your opinion, do you think this number is growing or decreasing over time?
Thanks for that question. And the estimated number of speakers, can you imagine that it's growing in my opinion? Because I don't believe this, that they say, when elders die, the language died. No, it doesn't work like that. Each and every day, if we go into details and we learn words, we create new words, we create music, we write poetry and everything, we are speakers of the language. And for your question to ask, the Koi language or the Koi language, approximately there are 4,500 or more speakers in South Africa. The so-called Sun language, there is 2,700 to 2,900. And 50,000 speakers at the current moment, or even if States of Africa releases its language report here, we will probably see it will increase.
Great. So I saw this several weeks ago, and I think this is the perfect opportunity to ask you this. I've come across several social media pages and posts in recent times that seek to push for the Koikoi language to be made an official language of South Africa. Can you tell us more about this? I mean, what's this about?
Now we're going to face the elephant in the room. Koikoi, for almost 30 years, has never been made a South African official language. It's still a language that is still to be. It's not official, but it's a spoken language. And that is why the problem that I personally have. How can you say that the language must be preserved if you don't do your part as a government? Nothing has been done. And even the 16th of June this year, South Africa will have 26 years of constitution, which states in Section 6, Article Amendment 1 and Annex 2 that all Koi, San and all other indigenous fragile and extinct languages must be relived, preserved, and kept for future generations. And I'm like, what? You do one thing and you say another thing in a document, because the document stuff don't get implemented what you say, what you are doing. So, and even what is so annoying is that if you look at the South African coat of arms, the Saku or the dialect, the Ru language, is predominantly only Te E Kara Ke, which means unity in diversity. So what unity in diversity is there if the mother of mother languages isn't even official in your country? It's a painful thing. And I hope that our government will do at least something and just not have talk, because we all know talk is cheap.
Right. Before we leave, Jeffrey, let me give you the opportunity to talk briefly about this year's Koikoi Language Week celebration and your plans for promoting the Koikoi Language Week in the upcoming year.
Thanks for that question. Our act of contributions is our plans for 2024 is our theme is the same theme as for this year in the International Koikoi Language Week see that cook, see that huvas or our land, our language. That is our theme that we are heading for this year. That's coming because remember, we are now in the fourth or third year of the decade of indigenous languages by the United Nations UNESCO arm.
Wonderful, wonderful. One more question before we leave. You spoke about several challenges of the Khoikhoi language. And I want to ask you this. What support or collaboration from governmental or non-governmental entities do you believe is crucial to advancing the recognition and teaching of the Khoikhoi language in South African schools?
Interesting. And do you get what I'm going to mean now, what I'm going to tell you now? Support is crucial for NGOs because NGOs are like custodians of the society. How can you say that society in the broader public as an NGO is one of your targets, but yet you don't do things on grassroots level that are there for you to preserve stuff and to make sure that people are aware what is going on, even teaching in government schools? I have experienced from last year and this year that at a local primary school, I was giving after school basic phrases from the Khoikhoi language reader to the children, grade 6 to grade 7, about the foundation phrase of Khoikhoi. And it was interesting. The kids loved it and everything. But the thing is, your time frame, 30 minutes after school. And yet, there comes another thing. Khoikhoi is not official. So, how are we going to do things if we are not official? So, that means that it won't be prioritized. And that is the problem. Can you imagine that? But, we are here. Everything is going good. We are going well. And for the third year of International Languages Decade, we are going. Kutara. Yeah, that is the thing. We all go, but things must just come to a point where government and NGOs must play their part. Like I said previously, they cannot come and just say this and that, but on the other hand, you do nothing. You do the opposite of what you talk, or it's just cheap political gimmicks. Because remember, next year we have a general election in South Africa, so things will be said to make to believe that our promises will be fulfilled. But no, 30 years, 26 years, it's still the same old story. I don't know anymore.
Great, great, great. It's been wonderful discussing the Khoikhoi language with you, Jeffrey. Thank you so much for sharing your language and your heritage with us. As usual, we'll be sharing your social media details with our audiences so they can engage further. Thanks again for your time and contribution, Jeffrey.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Tamatik Omship, no problem. And Sadakasik Uhare comes up. We need to have these conversations because these conversations make us who we are, and also we must take each other's hands so that we can just go and make things happen. And I thank you, Nate. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I hope when we talk again that all these things will come into action and not just words. Kai si gangans, kai ayos.
Thanks for tuning in to Africa's LSP podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and learned something new. For feedback or inquiries, reach out to us at podcast@bolingoconsult.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platforms. Until next time, stay curious and keep growing.